right here. Only the best on VOA.
I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with this worldwide news update. Hundreds of thousands of Palestinians streamed into Gaza's most heavily damaged area on Monday after Israel opened the north for the first time since the early weeks of the war with Hamas. AP correspondent Joe Fetterman has more from Jerusalem.
This is the first time people have been able to return to their homes in over a year. So we are seeing very dramatic scenes of tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of people streaming back on foot, walking along the coast toward their former homes in northern Gaza. We also see some movement of private vehicles moving through checkpoints that are manned by private American security firms. Now, this does not mean that the war is over. This is not an end to the war, but it is an end to the war as we have known it in these past few months. As part of this pullback, Israeli troops are now confined largely to a buffer zone along the border with Gaza. This is allowing the first free movement of Palestinian civilians in over a year.
AP correspondent Joe Fetterman. Thousands fled the city of Goma on Monday as fighting raged between Congolese forces and rebels backed by neighboring Rwanda, who claim to have captured Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo's largest regional hub. AP correspondent Aya Benjwani reports.
Fighting has escalated in recent days despite calls from the UN Security Council for the insurgents to withdraw. Gunshots rang across the city overnight before dozens of rebels in military uniform early in the morning marched into a city on the border with Rwanda. The UN Security Council called on M23 rebels to immediately reverse advances. Other countries, including the United States and France, have also condemned the rebel push. I'm Haya Panjwani.
This is VOA News. Survivors of the Nazi Holocaust on Monday marked the 80th anniversary of the liberation of the notorious Auschwitz concentration camp. Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman reports.
Those attending the commemoration included German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, Britain's King Charles, French President Emmanuel Macron, Polish President Andrzej Duda, and many other leaders. They did not make speeches, but rather listened, for perhaps the last time, to those who suffered and witnessed firsthand one of humanity's greatest atrocities. The survivors warned against a global rise in anti-Semitism and against intolerance. Retired physician Leo Weintraub is 99 years old.
It grieves me deeply to see in many European countries, but also in Poland, Nazi-style uniforms and slogans openly paraded at marches.
The ceremony was held at the site established in Poland by occupying German forces, first as a forced labor camp and then as a key part of the Nazi machinery devoted to exterminating European Jews. More than 1.1 million people, mostly Jews, perished here in gas chambers or from starvation, cold, and disease.
Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman. U.S. public health officials have been told to immediately stop working with the World Health Organization. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
A memo from a top CDC official tells senior agency leaders to immediately end any collaboration with the WHO. President Trump issued an order last week to start pulling the U.S. out of the WHO, but that requires congressional approval and 1 year's notice, among other things. Experts say the sudden stoppage in working with the WHO is a surprise and would hurt work on dealing with brewing health threats around the world. Sagar Magani, Washington.
The Trump Justice Department said Monday that it had fired more than a dozen employees who worked on criminal investigations into President Donald Trump. The actions target career prosecutors who worked on Special Counsel Jack Smith's team. It reflects the administration's determination to purge the government of workers it perceives as disloyal to the president. The move, which follows the reassignment of multiple senior career officials across divisions, was made even though rank-and-file prosecutors by tradition remain in their positions across presidential administrations and usually are not punished because of their involvement in sensitive investigations. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, VOANews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Trump's unconventional style is winning him fans in Israel.
Many Israelis, especially supporters of the right-wing government of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, expect Israel to benefit from many of these policies, as they did during President Trump's first presidential term.
A Chinese startup stuns the AI industry.
This could really be a change in the script, a change in the narrative around artificial intelligence.
And the new Secretary of Defense is on the job.
The lawful orders of the President of the United States will be executed inside this Defense Department swiftly and without excuse.
Today is Tuesday, January 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. As we reported on Monday's show, U.S. President Donald Trump suggested that Egypt and Jordan take in Palestinian refugees so that Gaza can be, quote, cleaned out so it can be rebuilt. The idea was not popular among Palestinians, some of whom see it as another attempt to get them off their land. Also, Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi and Jordanian Foreign Minister Ayman Safadi have rejected Trump's proposal. Edward Duranian reports from Cairo.
Egypt, Jordan, and the Palestinian Authority are telling U.S. President Donald Trump that they oppose his proposal to resettle residents of the Gaza Strip in Egypt or Jordan. The Egyptian Foreign Ministry issued a statement saying that the Egyptian government supports the Palestinian people's insistence to remain on their land, defending their legitimate rights and respecting international law. Egyptian public opinion remains firmly opposed to the resettlement of Palestinians on Egyptian territory, and President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi told a crowd of military officers recently that it would be easy to resettle some Palestinians in the Sinai, but that it would be difficult for anyone in Egypt to accept the idea. Someone might have suggested to me that it's easy for Egypt to take 2 million Palestinians in the Sinai because it's a vast territory and that this would solve the Palestinian problem. But if any of you in the military saw Palestinians leaving their land, would you be able to accept this? Khatar Abu Diab, who teaches political science at the University of Paris, tells VOA that a large segment of the Egyptian public refuses to accept the resettlement of Palestinians, temporarily or otherwise, in Egypt, and the liquidation of what they see as the historic Palestinian cause to establish an independent state. He says that despite the difficult economic situation in Egypt and the fact that it could have a significant economic windfall if it were to accept President Trump's proposal, there is a large proportion of Egyptian public opinion that would not accept this option. Paul Sullivan, a former professor at the American University of Cairo and fellow at the Atlantic Council, told VOA that no Egyptian leader could accept such a proposal.
No Egyptian leader who wants to stay in power would agree to such a request. It would destabilize Egypt and likely lead to greater regional instability.
Jordan's foreign minister, Ayman Safadi, also rejected President Trump's proposal, saying that Palestine is for the Palestinians and Jordan is for the Jordanians, and that the solution to the Palestinian problem is located on Palestinian soil and embodied by a Palestinian state. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Meanwhile, Israel's leaders have high expectations for Trump's second term, and analysts say Israeli officials hope that his unconventional approach to foreign policy will get them the results they want on their top security priorities. But as Linda Gradstein reports from Jerusalem, Trump's push for a peace deal with Saudi Arabia could be a source of tension.
President Trump's newest proposal for managing the Middle East conflict by sending Palestinians to Egypt and Jordan is emblematic of what many in Israel see as an unconventional approach to foreign policy, one that could bring results that Israel wants to see, like an aggressive approach to Israel's top enemy, Iran. Many Israelis, especially supporters of the right-wing government of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, expect Israel to benefit from many of these policies, as they did during President Trump's first presidential term. Prime Minister Netanyahu welcomed President Trump's return to the White House.
I believe that working together again, we will raise the U.S.-Israel alliance to even greater heights. I'm confident that we will complete the defeat of Iran's terror axis and usher in a new era of peace and prosperity for our region.
Some Israeli analysts say that with Trump's support, Israel can pursue the destruction of Iran's nuclear program after Israel weakened Iranian defense systems and Iran's proxies in Gaza and Lebanon. Dan Diker heads the Jerusalem Center for Security and Foreign Affairs.
Israel needs, very much needs the support, cooperation, collaboration, moral clarity of the incoming Trump administration in order to finally, perhaps, eliminate the Iranian regime leadership and its nuclear program.
Other analysts say they are not sure if President Trump will support Israeli military action against Iran. Halit Barel is a former director of Israel's National Security Council.
He would first try to push for a deal, a different deal than the one that he opted out of course, but that would be his first priority.
President Trump says he wants to expand the Abraham Accords. His previous administration negotiated among Israel and the Gulf states by engineering a peace deal between Israel and Saudi Arabia. Jonathan Reinhold is a specialist on U.S.-Israeli relations at Bar-Ilan University.
He wants to be the guy to do, you know, the deal of the century. The more Israel normalizes its relations with the Gulf states, the more they can cooperate together to deal with security threats like Iran and like ISIS, the less America has to do. And from Trump's point of view, in the grand scheme of things, he wants America to do less.
Saudi Arabia has stated that any Israeli-Saudi peace deal would be conditioned on progress toward a Palestinian state, a policy rejected by Israel's right-wing government. This could be a source of friction between Trump and Israeli leaders.
He will be looking for a deal on some sort of a Palestinian entity in the West Bank to try to resolve that finally with Israel. That would indicate that Israel needs to be out in front of that issue and make a number of different alternatives.
President Trump has pledged to end all wars and has widely received credit in Israel for the current ceasefire and hostage release deal between Israel and Hamas. But finding lasting solutions to Middle East conflicts may be an even tougher challenge for the returning U.S. president. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
Changing gears now, we look to Europe. European Union foreign ministers agreed Monday to continue sanctions against Russia over its war in Ukraine, along with easing sanctions against Syria, now that there's new leadership in Damascus. Lisa Bryant has that story from Paris.
Weeks of stalling by Hungary finally ended Monday, allowing the EU to renew sanctions against Russia for another 6 months. But Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban, considered close to Moscow, is pushing for something in return. For Ukraine to reopen a gas pipeline to Central Europe after letting a transit deal expire. The bloc also earmarked aid for Moldova's energy needs that Europe says are threatened by Russia. The 27-member bloc moved in the opposite direction when it came to Syria, agreeing to scale up humanitarian aid and ease some sanctions. Now the country is under a new leadership. Here's EU Foreign Policy Chief Kaya Kallas.
This could give a boost to Syrian economy and help the country get back on its feet.
Syria's Foreign Minister Assad al-Shabani has called the EU's move a positive step. European foreign ministers also discussed a raft of other thorny issues, from the Gaza ceasefire to Iran and the conflict in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Another key topic, relations with the new Trump administration. Again, EU Foreign Affairs Chief Kallas.
As the United States shifts to more transactional approach, Europe needs to close ranks. We are stronger when we are united. That was the view that everybody shared.
Kallas described Washington as Europe's closest ally, but tensions have surfaced over trade, military spending, and Greenland after President Trump indicated he wanted to acquire the territory.
We are not negotiating on Greenland. Of course, we are supporting our member state, Denmark, and its autonomous region, Greenland.
Kallas also noted the many ways the EU and US are interlinked, but she said Europe needs to take into account its own strengths in discussions with partners as well as with adversaries. Lisa Bryant, VOA News, Paris.
A new Chinese startup company called DeepSeek is making waves in the AI world this week. The AI assistant became the top-rated free app available on Apple's App Store in the U.S., but it must temporarily limit registrations due to a cyber attack. Lisa Bernard of Reuters has more.
Chinese startup DeepSeek, whose new low-cost AI model rattled tech stocks Monday, suffered a large-scale cyber attack, causing it to temporarily limit registrations. Earlier in the day, DeepSeek said it was hit by outages on its website after its AI assistant became the top-rated free app in Apple's U.S. App Store and overtook ChatGPT in downloads. DeepSeek claims it uses cheaper chips and less data, challenging the idea that advanced semiconductors, like those made by NVIDIA, are needed to run AI applications. That sent major tech stocks tumbling, with shares of NVIDIA falling as much as 17.8% at one point Monday morning. Brian Jacobson is chief economist at Annex Wealth Management.
This could really be a change in the script, a change in the narrative around artificial intelligence, where it's no longer about what has been called the picks and shovels. That was like NVIDIA, as far as with the chips that they were selling, and maybe even the data center providers. Now it's moved on from the picks and the shovels more to perhaps the refiners and the jewelers in that narrative, where it's more about what's the actual use case of the technology.
DeepSeek's popularity has also upended widely held views about U.S. dominance in the AI space and the effectiveness of Washington's export controls targeting China's advanced chip and AI capabilities. Little is known about the company behind DeepSeek, a small Hangzhou-based startup founded in 2023 when search engine giant Baidu released the first Chinese AI large language model. Since then, dozens of Chinese tech companies, large and small, have released their own AI models, but DeepSeek is the first to be praised by the U.S. tech industry as matching or even surpassing the performance of cutting-edge U.S. models.
That's Lisa Bernard of Reuters reporting for us. And here are some other stories we're following from around the world. The 80th anniversary of the liberation of the Auschwitz concentration camp by Soviet troops was marked on Monday with a ceremony at the site of the former death camp in Poland. Elderly camp survivors walked together to the death wall where prisoners were executed, including many Poles who resisted the occupation of their country. They were joined by Polish President Andrzej Duda, whose nation lost 6 million citizens during the war. Nazi forces murdered some 1.1 million people at the site in southern Poland, which was under German occupation during World War II. Most of the victims were Jews, killed on an industrial scale in gas chambers, but the Nazis also murdered many Poles, Roma, Soviet prisoners of war, gays, and others. The Trump administration has begun mass deportations of undocumented immigrants with raids in cities such as Denver, Philadelphia, Atlanta, Boston, Miami, Chicago, Buffalo, Newark, and many more. The administration announced that it would expand expedited deportations without appearances before a judge. The first flight with deportees has already arrived in Guatemala. Russian drone attacks damaged infrastructure sites in western, central, and eastern Ukraine on Monday, injuring at least 5 people in the city of Nikopol. Meanwhile, a Kremlin spokesperson said Monday that Russia has not received any signals about a potential meeting between Russian President Vladimir Putin and U.S. President Donald Trump. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Karish. Taking a look now at American domestic politics, one of President Trump's more controversial cabinet nominees was Pete Hegseth, his nominee for Secretary of Defense. Hegseth faced accusations of sexual assault, lack of management experience, and lack of senior military experience. Nevertheless, he was confirmed by the Senate late last week and arrived for his first day of work at the Pentagon on Monday. And just like the man who nominated him, he has promised that changes are coming. VOA's national security correspondent Jeff Selden has more.
Morning, everybody. How we doing?
Moments after stepping out of his motorcade, new Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth put the U.S. military on notice.
The lawful orders of the President of the United States will be executed inside this Defense Department swiftly and without excuse.
The decorated veteran and former Fox News host also promised accountability and more changes, saying President Donald Trump will be signing executive orders calling for a U.S. version of Israel's Iron Dome missile defense system, the removal of all diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI initiatives, and the reinstatement of troops forced to leave the military after refusing to get the COVID vaccine.
Our job is lethality and readiness and warfighting.
Hegseth also made clear the Pentagon will be fully behind the Trump administration's efforts to secure the southern border.
We've helped move forward troops, put in more barriers, and also to ensure mass deportation, support of mass deportations in support of the president's objective. That is something the Defense Department absolutely will continue to do.
Asked about reports that he may fire the country's highest-ranking military officer, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General C.Q. Brown, Hegseth told reporters, "I'm standing with him right now. I look forward to working with him." Jeff Selden, VOA News, the Pentagon.
Tension is on the rise in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo as rebels backed by Rwanda have seized the city of Goma. David Doyle of Reuters tells us how we got here.
Rwandan-backed rebels marched into Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo's largest city on Monday, according to witnesses. That's prompted thousands of people, including Congolese soldiers, to flee across the border into Rwanda. The advance by the Rebel Alliance, spearheaded by the Tutsi-led M23 militia, is the latest escalation in decades of conflict. And that's in a region already suffering one of the world's worst humanitarian crises. Corne Nanga, leader of the Congo River Alliance that includes the M23, said his forces were in control of Goma, though that could not be independently confirmed. Gunfire rang out near the airport, city center, and border with Rwanda, with two Goma residents reporting ongoing clashes between government-aligned militia and M23 fighters. Uruguay's military said 100 Congolese soldiers had handed weapons to them at the UN peacekeeping mission in Congo as requested by the rebels. Additionally, two United Nations sources said Congolese and Rwandan soldiers had fired at each other across the border. There was no immediate comment from Congo's government or military. Congo's eastern borderlands are a tinderbox of rebel and militia fiefdoms. They stem from two regional wars after Rwanda's 1994 genocide, when Hutu extremists murdered close to 1 million Tutsis and moderate Hutus. The M23, the latest in a long line of Tutsi-led rebel movements backed by Rwanda, previously captured Goma in 2012. However, it withdrew days later after an agreement brokered by neighboring nations. M23's defeat the next year was followed by a deal calling for its demobilization. But M23 never fully disarmed and launched a fresh offensive in 2022. It captured vast swathes of the mineral-rich North Kivu province, forcing hundreds of thousands from their homes. M23 is well-trained and professionally armed, and it says it exists to protect Congo's Tutsi population from the Congolese government and ethnic Hutu militias. UN experts say Rwanda has supported M23 with 3,000 to 4,000 troops, as well as providing significant firepower.
Reiterate in unequivocal terms.
The UN Security Council held crisis talks on Sunday with the United States, France, and Britain, condemning what they said was Rwanda's backing of the rebel advance. Rwanda dismissed statements that, quote, did not provide any solutions.
Mr. President.
It accused the Congolese government of sabotaging negotiations with M23 and supporting Hutu militiamen linked to the 1994 genocide. Congo rejects these allegations.
That's David Doyle of Reuters reporting for us, and with some more on the situation in Goma, particularly the devastating humanitarian catastrophe that's unfolding, we turn to VOA's Nairobi bureau chief, Miriama Diallo.
Rose Chwenko is DRC's country director for Mercy Corps. She tells VOA that since last week, the humanitarian group has closely monitored the situation as government forces and M23 clashed in and around Goma, a city of around 2 million people.
From Wednesday last week, with the fall of Minova, followed by the fall of Sake, which are key supply routes into Goma, the situation looked a little bit more dire, and with the imminent takeover or incursion into Goma itself by the rebel forces. So we made some decisions first to move out non-essential staff, pull back our teams from the ground where it was no longer safe to continue to provide humanitarian services.
But that changed quickly as the situation grew more unstable in Goma, the capital of North Kivu province, which is on the border with Rwanda.
On Sunday, with the escalation of the conflict around Goma, we had to pull out even the senior team into Gisenyi so that we can continue to operate and provide the necessary support to our teams across the country.
She tells VOA the situation is dire.
As of yesterday, we know that the airport at Goma is closed and under M23 control. We have heard reports of sporadic fighting throughout the center of Goma City. Some of us on this side of the border could actually hear gunshots at some point during the night. We are aware of M23 presence in Goma, but still uncertain of what the actual situation is.
As M23 rebels last week made advances into Goma, 3 UN peacekeepers died and 7 South African soldiers and 3 from Malawi serving in a separate Southern African mission, SADC, also were killed, according to the UN and South African officials. At an emergency meeting on Sunday, the United Nations Security Council called for an end to the hostilities. Bintou Keita, the head of the UN mission in Congo, addressed the council via video link and painted a bleak picture.
Roads are blocked and the airport can no longer be used for evacuation or humanitarian efforts. M23 has declared the airspace over Goma closed. In other words, we are trapped.
Jack Mongi, a Goma resident who sent VOA an audio message in French via WhatsApp, says that fighting was still going on around the airport. He says, as I speak, you can hear gunshots. We are under our mattresses, under our beds. And if you listen, you can hear the gunshots. The Congolese Minister of Foreign Affairs told the Security Council that this is a frontal assault, a declaration of war. VOA reached out to the Rwandan government for comment, but has not heard back yet. Many countries present at the special meeting condemned the attacks, including the acting U.S. ambassador to the U.N., Dorothy Shea, who called for a ceasefire.
The United States will consider all the tools at its disposal in order to hold accountable those responsible for sustaining armed conflict, instability, and insecurity.
In Nairobi, Kenya's President William Ruto said he spoke to both Congolese and Rwandan presidents and called for an immediate and unconditional cessation of hostilities. Ruto, who's also the chair of the East African Community, says he'll be convening an extraordinary EAC summit in the coming days to try to chart a way forward in this crisis. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
And that'll wrap it up for today. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Steve Carrick.